give a message to Sita. So he gave him the ring, the identification card, and then sent him. So then one name for Ramchandra is Hanumat Prasha. Took me like 2 years to find out what my name meant after I got it. So I was initiated in 74, and somehow or other, you know, a lot of things to discuss. Actually, it's kind of organized. The class, it's kind of an organized program. We even have a kind of outline and summary. But I arrived yesterday, so it's still being photocopied. It's now coming by donkey. The donkeys are bringing it back from the photocopy. Oh, here it is. My God. Okay. So we got that. Actually, that's not important today. The other one, the handwritten one's important. I wrote the final course outline in the back of a taxi.
So it's sorted. We'll sort it in the morning.
Okay. Is that one here? This is the important one.
Should we give that to everyone?
Huh?
Should we give this to everyone?
Yeah, can I have one also? Actually, that's this original. Nothing there. Nothing there.
This is the whole
original. Yeah, this is the original. Okay. Okay. So, last year, I gave a course we have in the first two cantos called Padapadma, which is an overview of the whole Bhagavatam, and then returning to a focus on the first two cantos. And it's available on a web page, geocities.com. This is the Yahoo web page? No, it's the geocities.com/ASA Anjana Sudha Academy, ASA_HED. And if you get the paper, it's right here. Something like this. Second line. Third line. And so we have some things there. And I was initiated in 1974. And I think about Udana Shasti, more or less. Then I was a brahmachari and struggling and being, you know, harassed and crying and everything else, like everybody that's gone. And I took sannyas in 1984 on the same day. Then I started initiating other people on 1994, the same day. So 74, 84, 94. Prabhupada said one time I met Bhaktisiddhanta in 1933. Said I 22? When is my 2022? Took initiation in 33. I renounced the family connection in 44. I started back to Godhead in 44. In 55, started back to Godhead. No. They left then. And then in 66, I started ISKCON. It's always, you know, double digits like that. And they said, what happened in 77, qualified? I said, oh, something special. So, Baba Teeth. So I started after I took sannyas, I was reading Prabhupada says every sannyasi should be head of his own institution for preaching Krishna consciousness. So I started the Anjana Sudha Academy. We've got a little post bookmark they made up here in the room. Anjana is Hanuman's mother. So Anjana Sudha is the name for Hanuman. So I started the Anjana Sudha Academy and trying to do different programs, you know, preaching programs, and especially trying to do academic programs, enliven people to understand Prabhupada's books, to appreciate them, to distribute them, you know, ultimately like that, to other people as well. So this Padapadma, first two cantos, has become a real central part of our work. Basically two things really focusing more on. One is the Upadeshamrita. You've got a small, portable. If you're a traveling preacher, you can hang it around your neck like that. And so I have a study guide for that, and more and more information about that. I discovered how it was typed, things like that, you know, archives. And then the other thing is the Padapadma, the first two cantos of Bhagavatam. And the other things are going on, but those are, I'm going to try and develop those, you know, to a large degree, and get people to maybe have more seminars, these first two cantos. And last year we did that. So then Mother Narayani, other people suggested, why don't you come again next year, another course next year, okay. So during the year we communicated and different people had different diseases, right? Divyam, is she here?
She's
leaving for the rest. Oh, okay, yeah. I contacted her cyber form. Everyone saw her. But she had malaria. John, and different things, and you know, so the organizing the seminar became a little bit, you know, what's the word, disorganized. Actually, the second time I was in Vrindavan, I came in 78 the first time in Vrindavan, Prabhupada's Tirubhav Mahotsava, and then 1984 the next time. And I think when I was here then, Bhakti Vrinda Maharaj, he was Ayodhyapati, and he was down in the, over in the kitchen area negotiating with one Brijbasi, you know, business guy, you know, for the cheese, for a big festival. He wanted, I don't know, maybe like 20 rupees a kilo or something, and Ayodhyapati was trying to get him down to 16, and he kept pushing and pushing, and the guy wouldn't go lower than 19. So finally he grabbed him and kissed him on the cheek. And the guy said, all right, 16 rupees. Yeah. And Bhakti Vrinda Maharaj turned and looked at me and said, Vrindavan is the land of lawless love. So I think this class is a manifestation of lawless love. Right? I've been seriously working on it for a long time. And here's kind of all the different paperwork I have and everything else. And this was, study notes. I finally took all my different pieces of paper and tried to organize and tried to imagine what kind of students would be here, right? Different groups like that. And then yesterday, the taxi coming from Calcutta and arriving here, I did this. You know, so this is the kind of the last hope for a study guide. Yes, this is the VIT, or in Spanish, as they call it, the VIHE, El VIHE. 7th through 9th, September 2003. Okay. Number one, there's many things wrong with this, but Prasanta noticed one of them right away. You can notice different things wrong with this outline, you get credit, extra credit. So the basis of this was especially for the Bhakti Vaibhava students. That was one idea for the third canto this year. So I focused a lot on the third canto. And then more detail, Mother Narayani in one email asked me, how do you explain science, you know, to other people like that? Because I've been doing that for a long time. So that kind of comes back into, these are the main things, the kind of the focus is the third canto, and especially science. Yeah. And then maybe the first part would be kind of a general perspective in all these things. Then the second part, maybe tomorrow, you should have a... That's it? Okay, being collated. As kind of a summary of all these different, lectures and, preaching the science work, I'll describe my background a little bit. I gave a lecture in Calcutta last year, about 4:40 time, and I was the chief guest for a national seminar on science and technology in ancient India, organized by the Department of Ancient Indian History and Culture of Calcutta University, like that. So it's a very authorized, solid document. It's been reprinted in Spanish, other like that. So myself, I was born on Guam in the Pacific Ocean, 1948, like that, about 10 o'clock at night, 9:30. And then I grew up in California. My parents were working there for the U.S. government. I grew up in California, Southern California, and then I moved to Northern California. And then this was all during the big science, when science was at its peak. During the morning walk, like 30 years ago, 20 years ago, Prabhupada said, this scientific, prestige, whatever, fame, will all be finished in 50 years, whether you preach or not, like that. We were 1970 or something, probably saying that, Many times, of course, probably walking, talking about science, like that, science, then, when I was a child, was even more, king. They discovered the atom bomb, electricity, so many things were becoming just miraculous, what science would do. And I actually forgot this, but one devotee, Gaurav Krishna, my same age, we were growing up in the same environment, he reminded me of this. That I remember talking about this when we were in high school, like in 11th grade, 10th grade. And everybody was very kind of depressed. It was a very depressing fact. And that was that just within a few years, science was going to make us all immortal. And if we're not going to become immortal, at least we'll live for 500 years or 700 years like that. And then in the meantime, we can figure out how to become immortal. And people were actually a little very depressed about the poor old people, the old people who are going to die within the next few years. They're just missed out becoming immortal like the rest of us, And we were all going to become immortal and they were going to die. It was a very lamentable thing. But people were actually thinking like this. This is actually the consciousness, you know, science, you know. We're going to go to other planets and, you know, fly to different places, and we'll, you know, we're going to matter transporting machines and all these things like that. But it didn't work out. But anyway, that was the consciousness. So I entered the University of California. And of course, I started electrical engineering. Had more application in mind than pure physics. And electrical engineering. But after about 2 years, I could really see where the whole curriculum was going. And I took the courses, and I was getting really good, you know, first-class marks and everything else like that. And I could see, okay, this is what science is. This is, you know, okay, there it is. There's the conclusion. They have these ideas, these theories, these ways of doing it. You have to understand more processes of thinking, more information. But that's where it's going. And I was talking to, you know, first-class scientists. So I didn't know what to do. So, okay, well, so I changed from electrical engineering to biological engineering. It didn't even exist almost at that point. And then I was doing, you know, open brain surgery on dogs and, you know, who formerly had been psychologists, I guess, in their last life. And all these, you know, I was actually doing graduate work, you know, PhD work, some of it like that, in biology and upper division mammalian physiology, 110 A and B, with the textbook was Selkirk and Ganong. It actually was very interesting, because this is advanced, this is the second, third and fourth year in university in physiology. So pretty detailed, and we were doing real surgery and everything else. But then I began to see this is basically the same thing, you know, it's going to the same idea, structure of knowledge. So then I'm looking for something else, so we've gone to the physical sciences, the biological sciences, what's left? Psychology. So I started psychology. And then I had to graduate. So I graduated in psychology with a first place prize from the University of California with minor studies in biology and electrical engineering. And then I had to start a doctorate program at Northwestern University in Chicago, which is pretty, you know, first class university. And then I was just kind of looking at all Western knowledge at that point, like, is what's going on. It was a hippie revolution in the United States, the Vietnam War, it was LSD, and all these encounters with Asian knowledge, and everything was just kind of busting open at that point. You know? So at that point, I was really just taking all these different ideas from yoga and so many things like that, you know, and just trying to figure out what to do. There was a temple there in Evanston, you know, where the university was near Chicago. But I never met devotees. Maybe I wasn't ready. You know, but I should figure out where I was. So then I was talking to my mentor, my supervisor for the doctorate program, about all my thoughts and ideas. And he's listening. He was president of the American Psychological Association, central division. It's so big and powerful. They have two divisions like that. But he was a super genius. We'll hear about him later. You know, just think about that. He's a pretty old person. So he's listening to all my discussions about Western knowledge and all these things and what's happening in Eastern knowledge. And he's sitting there like this, you know. And finally he says, "You win!" "You win. You figured it out." He said, after you go to kindergarten, elementary school, middle school, secondary school, then you get university, then you get a PhD, then you become postdoctorate, assistant professor, associate professor, full professor, professor emeritus. He said, then you can do something creative. When you're almost too old, you know, to do anything. You know, when you get like 60 years old, you can have your own ideas, your own thing, you can do something individual different. Until that time, you have to just bow down to the authorities and kiss their lotus feet, you know, and go on like that, you know, and so on. So he suggests, he says, you can always come back to this track, try again, you know, but why don't you just try something new? Go try something different. Go to India. If you find out something interesting, tell me. You know, I never did. You know. So anyway, then I busted out of that, and I was an actor with the Second City for a while, which is one of the three best improvisational theater troupes. I was understudied. Improvisational theater is very sophisticated. Their techniques and psychology. They really have very deep technology for developing very deep, you know, ideas like that. You know what I mean? Right? 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 So, psychological technique, Sagatan. If you phrase a question so that the answer is naturally positive and nod your head up and down, then people will tend to nod their heads up and down too and say yes. You'd like to kill your mother, right? You'd like to kill your mother, right? Right? And the second technique is close and stay closed. Don't let the person, just keep, Gurdjieff has this in his Art of Teaching. In the way, so you're standing trying to say, it's a good book, you'd like to buy it, right? Then don't, even if it becomes tense, just don't say anything else, and after a while the person will say, well, let me look at it first. Let me look at it first. Okay, then thank you. So on. So there's so many techniques, actually, in psychology, which improvisational theater, they've developed them, systematized them into very fantastic techniques. So you see it in theater, movies, you see these things in movies. Prabhupada saw Western movies, and he said, so realistic. Even now, if you look at Indian movies even now, it's still like, it's like America back in the 1950s or something like that. And I saw, was forced to watch an Indian movie coming over on the airplane. And it's exactly like what was going on in America back about 1953. No, maybe 66. So still, India's trying to catch up with this technology, psychological technology, but still 40 years behind the West in technology and degradation, both, so on. What is now distracting your attention? It's okay. I'm experienced lecturer. This is the actual the lecture from the Calcutta University, like that. And okay, let's just break into this way. I give you a little summary of this. So, for various reasons, okay, I'll come back around with the legs. So, I was an actor, tried that, and that's really I haven't gone beyond that. Such deep technology there. If you want a book, you write this down here. Really fantastic book for theater and also psychology. It's Improvisation for the Theater by Viola Spolin. And I went back to Northwestern because she was there to work with her. Genius in terms of theater techniques, communication, the psychology. And so many techniques in psychology and Krishna consciousness, you can find the same way there. The book is still in print, right, reprint. And also in hardbound. You can get it on, you can look at Amazon.com and find it. Improvisation for the Theater. And it's games. A little theory, then games. How to play games. And by playing games, you can become, like Dustin Hoffman or who modern actors are, but you can become the best actor in the world like that. It's a fantastic book for teaching theater, for just for reading, acquiring psychological knowledge.
Is
it
the author?
Viola, Viola, Spolin. Viola Spolin. Her son started a committee in San Francisco, which was in one of the more famous theaters. So then I continued on, and as I tell the story, I was in America, but I say, then I got a black belt in Okinawan karate. This is our school sign there. Awichiru. It came from a combination, it came from the Shaolin, through Shaolin tradition to Okinawa, like that. And from that, basically, I had my training in Pranayama. Yeah, that's what it is. They know how to control. I talked to either the biggest or one of the biggest martial arts guys on earth, Peter Ralston. He has a studio in San Francisco there. He went, what is it called? Bloodsport. You ever see that? Watch Kung Fu movies? Anyway, this was Kurt Van Damme. He was playing the part of a guy who was the biggest. There's a competition in Asia every 4 years, kind of a little bit secret. And it's any fighting style. And it used to be no control, just full-on fighting. But so many people died, they changed it to controlled contact, and like that, and so on. So, it's just whatever fighting style you have, kung fu, anything, sabats, they come there and compete, and one guy wins like that. So this movie was an incredible movie, if you like, fighting scenes like that. You change the title to something else. So anyway, He was the he won this, And I asked, you don't want to fight with him. Hey, come on. When the Gaudiya Janardhan, he was a wrestler in college. He was good, So he was taking some classes from him. And he told him that one time he had like five guys like him, young, healthy guys, experienced fighters, surround him. And he said, okay, I want you all to attack me when I say go. Because they're all ready. Like that. He says, go. And Janardhan said he counted 1,001, less than 2 seconds, all five of them were on the ground. And they weren't hurt, but it took a couple of seconds to get their breath back like that. Five guys. Yeah. So anyway, he was super unbelievable. I saw him do things that you can't explain by Western science. So then I was talking to one of the students like that. He said, well, what's your philosophy of nature? You know, it's your science. And he says, oh, well, Chinese philosophy talks about earth. You know, you're hooking your button down on the earth, right? Water, fire, and what's next? Wood and paper. So I was thinking, oh, earth, water, fire, wood, and paper. Oh, okay. Well, what about air? He said, oh, in Chinese martial arts philosophy, air is like God. That's where they're at. Yeah, this guy maybe was a Bayou Davidson in his last lifetime or something. From his birth, he was attracted to this. He studied with some of the biggest Tai Chi guys on earth. One of the guys he studied with in New York, this famous guy, half nuts. But I mean, he does things like, he has, you know, solid brick, not artificial brick. He's put more sand in some. This is a real brick, you know, real bricks. And he would put a piece of tofu on top of it, right? Then he would go, you sound, right? Sound produces tactile nature, okay. So anyway, and the tofu wouldn't break, but the brick would break. I mean, like that. Or else, to get your PhD, your black belt, general test is you have to have a bird on your hand. Now to take off, a bird can't just flap his wings. He has to push like that. So you have to be so subtle in your prana that when the bird pushes, you back away. Right? And he's sitting there trying to push to take off. And you're like, right? Can't take off. Okay, grasshopper. Oh, slow grasshopper. Look at you, black belt. So anyway, I was talking to him, and he was discovering these things. So I was studying karate, the Ichiro Karate School. I was the first to be black belt. And after that, he just wanted to sign an oath, you know, about not revealing the secrets of the Ichiro Karate School. And if you do it, they'll track you down to the ends of the earth and destroy you, kill our relative. So I never signed the oath. And I'll before that. But from that, I had a lot of experience with prana. I didn't exactly know what it was at that time. They call it chi. Chi. So then, somewhere along the line, I came in contact with a Hare Krishna devotee, actually Budi Mantos, one of the story, at UC Davis. I graduated, didn't know what to do. And he sold me the Krishna book. But of course, being a typical dishonest Hare Krishna, he sold me volume 2. It took me, figuring out, and said, in the previous story, there was no previous story, that was the first story. And finally, at the bottom, I said, it's not volume 2. You know? But I wasn't disappointed in being cheated. Then I started looking for volume 1. So I read the Krishna book for a whole year, and then I went to the temple in San Francisco, and then I met ISKCON. First thing that follows on, then I met ISKCON devotees. You know? That's a long story. So I wanted to become involved with the Bhaktivedanta Institute. I'd heard about it. I'd heard about the Bhaktivedanta Institute and summer programs, but I was a treasurer, and I was basically really valuable doing that job. Yeah. And, you know, I was doing a lot of things in the temple like that stuff. So my efforts were Shanghai, what do you call it, sabotaged by temple presidents. So I never got involved in the Bhaktivedanta Institute from the beginning. Prabhupada wrote a letter saying all of our devotees with bachelor's degrees or higher should be sent to, you know, Sudhamar Maharaj to work with Bhaktivedanta Institute. So I have my bachelor's degree, but they just kind of ignored that instruction. But then later, about 1980, I came in contact, Sudhamar Maharaj moved to San Francisco, and then I came in contact with the Bhaktivedanta Institute. And you know, I was thinking about getting involved, not getting involved, and so many things, and you know, Krishna's inspiration and reading. And so finally, doing this, I met Tamal Krishna Maharaj in New York, and I asked him. I was thinking about getting involved in scientific preaching, and you know, but I don't know. I already went through all this. I didn't like it. You know, what should I do? What's your opinion? So he laserized me, as he often did, and he said, Prabhupada said over and over again for his entire last year, scientific preaching is my number one preaching program.
I hear you.
Then I met Rabindranath Sarup, who had been involved also. He was much more like, you know, laid back, intellectual. We discussed the whole thing. And I asked him, well, if scientific preaching is our number one preaching program, why didn't you get your PhD in philosophy? And he said, because I can't stand science. Something like that. Oh, okay. So, okay, it's important. Prabhupada said over and over again for his entire last year, scientific preaching is my number one preaching program. He said it would come down, but still, it's still very prominent. Actually, if you go out there now and contact different people like that and preaching at university levels, academic levels, the ordinary person, science is still the king. You know, it may have been dislodged from this fanaticism about we're going to, you know, make everybody immortal within the next 5 years. You know, but still, you know, science gives us our food, science gives us our communication, science gives us our defense, and science tells us who we are. Right? You know, you are the body. And so Prabhupada was so adamant about preaching to the scientists. You find so many, his life comes from life, the morning walk conversations, and Prabhupada says, kick on their face with boot, like that. So there are many different people preaching in these areas. Sataputa is very famous, and then Vasaraj has his institute now, and Sundalar Maharaj is preaching. Scientists many times are very, very intelligent people, very intellectual, they know 14 languages, their logical abilities are beyond belief, their focus is incredible, but they're emotionally, many times, like children, right? Emotionally distorted. Who was Newton's enemy? Two big scientists. Leibniz. You know Leibniz? He's a European scientist like that. So Newton and Leibniz had this incredible emotional battle going on like that. And then Einstein and Bohr, big emotional battle like that. So, frankly speaking, you know, even for the tape recorder here, in the Bhaktivedanta Institute, the scientific preaching programs, you'll find very big emotional disputes. And if you're going to work in this area, it's just the kind of people. So many, many instructions from Prabhupada about scientific preaching. For example, one thing he said, Sudamana Maharaj made up a whole curriculum for academic teaching. He suggested making the Berkeley Temple in San Francisco our center. And it was a different one than the simple one, the Bhakti Shastri. Prabhupada suggested certain books, you can call it Bhakti Shastri. Then he suggested the first six candles, Bhakti Vaibhava. Next six candles, Bhakti Vedanta. And later added, Chaitanya Charitamrita for Bhakti Sarvabhauma. But Sudamana Maharaj had a different curriculum and more details. And Prabhupada also said, oh, very good, yes, that's good. So it's not that they're, you know, this structure is the structure of Prabhupada said, you must do it like this. There's flexibility for different people and different approaches, different attitudes, and different ideas like that. It's just everybody has different character, different nature. Gurukula means the place of the guru. The real essence of the education is not the curriculum, but the teacher, right? That. So different teachers have different attitudes, different positions like that. You can see my position in science is science. I'm not a mathematician like Sataputa. I'm not a philosopher of science with a PhD like Rasaraj. I'm not a chemist like Sudhanandar Maharaj. You know. But I'm more a cultural anthropologist. You know, a position like that. So, the scientific preaching. So Prabhupada said, he told Sudhanandar Maharaj in response to his curriculum, he said, for social sciences, we'll use the speeches of Prithu Maharaj. And then the fourth canto. And he says, for physical sciences, we use the instructions of Kapiladeva. So his third canto is very much, very commonly, you know, the scientific preaching like that. That's pretty much point number 1A-. Right? ASA is the Anjana Sudha Academy, where I started. And our specific curriculum we're trying to work on is the American Bhagavat curriculum, the ABC, right? Fundamental ABCs. And the whole purpose is sankirtan, right? You know, that's what we're really here for, not just to get some interesting intellectuals self-stimulation like that, you know, or to become proud. Right? Yeah, to advance the spiritual life ourselves, but not just to keep it for ourselves. Chanika Pandit says, undigested food and unused knowledge both turn to poison. Right? So if you have a lot of knowledge and you don't distribute it, it's almost impossible not to become proud and become poisoned by your own knowledge like that. So whenever we're here, we should really be thinking, I'm here so I can explain this to somebody else. Right? Why do universities exist? It's a joke. So students can, so professors can learn. Right? Because when you teach to somebody else, then you see what's missing. You have to clarify your own ideas. You see what you didn't hear. Shravanam, kirtanam. And then you're trying to explain it, and you realize, oh, I don't understand this point. So you go back and you hear it again. You listen again. Ah, okay. Yeah. So shravanam, hearing, studying, reading Prabhupada's books, keeping your own, developing your own notes, your own systems, but for the purpose of sankirtan, preaching, right? And if we're studying the third canon or everything else, okay, that makes us better Bhagavad Gita preachers, right? You know, we can preach Bhagavad Gita now with more intensity, more purity. Using the Prabhupada's preaching, if you see Prabhupada's little conversations with ordinary people, this is Bhagavad Gita. You aren't the body. But the way he's preaching it is like so, like, he knows he's not the body. Right? If somebody tells you, you shouldn't smoke, right? It's like, okay. Yeah. When Prabhupada says you aren't the body, it's like, he knows it. You know? And also the logical examples, dealing with different kinds of people. You know? So in some ways, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita is just for learning how to preach Bhagavad Gita, learning how to preach the basic principles. But some people are more advanced. I just came from Calcutta, and we had a very, very nice program there with Professor Samaresh Bandopadhyaya, who's our friend there. And he was head of he's a professor now, but sometimes he was head of the Department of Ancient History and Culture at Calcutta University. Most prestigious positions in India. And so he's a very, very intelligent person. You can't just, give like simple arguments about things and, I heard the hairdressers or I saw on the news that it says this and that. No, he's looking for very, very sharp, sources for your information. Very good, well thought out logic like that. I was mentioning about cosmology and Sataputta's books, and he goes to his library and pulls out the original reference books that Sataputta quotes from. He shows me maps of the universe that Sataputta has in his books. He said, okay, he didn't even Sataputta doesn't exist like that. In terms of Bhumandal and things like that. There was a PhD coming to the temple in Madrid, in Spain, a very intelligent person. And the devotees couldn't answer all of his questions. He had so many questions. And so they had him washing pots in the kitchen, chanting Hare Krishna. And they told him, don't worry though, there's one big intelligent person coming, Richard Thompson, here's his book, Sataputta Das. So Bhakti Srirangamaraj told me this story. So then finally, Sataputta's coming for a conference, they're at the farm in Madrid, outside of Madrid. And he arrived late at night, so he went right to bed, he got up a little late. The next morning, Bhakti Srirangamaraj, Keshava Bharati, somebody else, this Spanish PhD guy, were sitting in the room talking. The Sataputta walked in, and Bhakti Saranga said it was kind of like Godzilla meets King Kong. These two characters. Godzilla meets King Kong. It was kind of like, nobody introduced anybody, nobody just, don't be polite. Sataputta walked in, just kind of looked, and this guy looked up and saw this devotee coming in. The Sataputta kind of sat down in his chair, this guy sat down. And they started like that. There's no, just like nothing, And so it was 44 megabod, something DSL line, laser optic, fiber optic, literally like that. I've never talked to Sataputta like that. I mean, it's like, one time I was trying to understand something about geometry, spatial representation, over the phone and discussing for about 3 months. Finally, I met him, person to person, and he said, oh, that's what you want to know. So he just started downloading, all this information to me, 5 hours worth of information in 2 hours. So I asked him, can you talk a little slower? So he slowed down about 2,200 megabaud. And at that point, I could follow everything he was saying. It was just such incredible, like, Krishna conscious, like, you know, explanation of the whole points. So they walked on like that, and Bhakti Saranga Maharaj said, there's a tape recorder right about here. But every time he would try and, like, raise his hand to touch the tape recorder, he would both turn their heads towards him like this. And he felt like a 5-year-old child stealing cookies. He put his hands back down, he was back here. 10 minutes later, he'd try and ease over again like that, and they would just kind of, like, halfway turn towards him. So he said it went on for 2 hours. It was like question, counter-question, fact, example, reference, quotation, logical argument, counter-argument. And after 2 hours, this guy was completely satisfied. Yeah. And today he is. But he's very satisfied. So Prabhupada said, scientific preaching is my number one preaching program. So make it your number one preaching program. Mother, one devotee, Mother Maharani Devi Dasi. Tape recorders are going here. She's wife of one of my friends, Bhoganath Ram Das. And we do puppet tours together, everything else like that, you know. But she's not a scientist. You know, she's, you know, probably, I don't know if she knows the difference between an atom and a molecule, like that, you know. But she's a really good cook. So Prabhupada says, scientific preaching means wonderful reception, first-class reception, well-dressed, everything properly arranged, nice talk. Then, first-class prasadam. Then you talk about logic, argument, things like that. And you show Maharaj, a book of Bhakti from Dhamma, how it works. You know, a person totally, not impolite, but totally not going to accept the philosophy. After very respectful treatment, nice prasadam. When to speak of accepting the philosophy, he was supporting it. He was giving examples from science to support all this. It works. So, what's the formula? Nice, beautiful reception. First class facade, and then you discuss philosophy. Nobel laureates, I see it comes time for the coffee break, you know, and they're running back to the coffee break table, and Mother Maharani is the sweets and everything else is there, they're looking at everything like that and taking it. So who's the best Bhaktivedanta Institute science preacher in the world? Devi Maharani Devi Das. You find your position. I came about A minus. I scored about the top 20 percentile of graduate students on an analogical thinking. I'm probably one of the best analogical thinkers in ISKCON. I think I could even defeat Kridayana Maharaj. Analogical thinking, like that. You know, making analogies and stuff. But amongst other people, I'm like a mosquito. You know, like that. The velocity is possible. Less philosophy, less philosophy. So you find your position. Everybody's got a certain kind of intelligence, a certain nature. But the point is, Prabhupada told Sri Brahma Maharaj, every scientist you make a devotee is worth 1,000 ordinary devotees. Right? Yeah, every scientist you make a devotee is worth 1,000 ordinary devotees. But, in my experience, it takes about 1,000 times as long. So, take your choice. Yeah. But that's the first part here. So before you can explain social sciences, you usually have to explain philosophy of nature. And just way down here in the second part, we have topics. And topic number one is, women are less intelligent. Okay, try to explain that. First, you talk about what is a woman, right? You know, what is our philosophy of nature? And everybody understands that we're not women, we're not men. Right? And what is intelligence? Right? So first you have to clarify these things. And the first thing Krishna talks about in Bhagavad Gita is the same thing, Sankhya. You know, what is the body, what is the mind, what is the material nature, these kind of things like that. So generally, presenting these topics, it's Varna Ashram Dharma, these things are very difficult to understand unless you have a basic idea that we're not talking about people. We're talking about bodies. And it goes clearly explained like that. So how to present these things. First off, presenting a cultural background, and then next presenting Sankhya, the physical sciences, philosophy of nature. Technically speaking, science is a philosophy of nature. philosophy of aesthetics, philosophy of ethics, philosophy of ontology, philosophy of nature. You're talking to a credible philosopher. And then you can talk about, you know, social philosophy, like that. And then finally go into aesthetics, you know, love of God, these kind of things like that. There's a very good order to take like that. So that's kind of the background. And the Bhaktivedanta Institute is doing some work like that. I just came to Oxford on the way to India. And there, the Oxford Center is really developing very well. It's not specifically working in science, but it's working in academia. And so far they're being accepted as a reputable academic institution. It will probably take about 7 years. They submitted a request to be affiliated with Oxford University as an institute or a center. So the Jewish community did that. They submitted a request, and they got a letter responding to the request that the request had been received 7 years after they sent the request in. We have received your request, and we are considering your application like that. So British, but very slow, but very thorough. Prabhupada says the British are the most cunning people on earth, most clever. Whenever you're talking with Englishmen, especially at Oxford, you have this sensation that is at least three levels to everything you say like that. Good morning, sir. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, it's like, say, good morning, sir. It's like that. So, but to be affiliated with Oxford University, you know, the university there comes back from the 7th century or something like that. And they had a chair of Oriental Studies from the time before they first came to India. Their library has something like 6 million books. But you see nothing. It's old buildings, very beautiful ancient buildings. And where's this library? He said, oh, it's underground. Six stories below ground. So you have the VIT, it was your cow dung covered building. But where do you have all these books and everything? Well, oh, that doorway over there, just go through there, there's a library. You open, there's a stairway. There's six stories, right? Six stories like that. You know? So probably they have all of Prabhupada's books, all of Prabhupada's room conversations, everything, you know, there, like that, you know, for the, you know, so on. So the program is developing very nicely. Krishna Kshetra is there, and Radhika, Ravi Gupta from the BTG, Radhika Raman, is there. Mother Manjari, you know, working there. And other programs. And so myself, I go through South America 3 months out of the year, and just trying to find places to preach, right? That's the thing. You just try and find some place to get Prabhupada's message across. So I became affiliated with the, Ricardo Palma University. It's in Peru. It's a very reputable place. And one devotee, Mother Dora Bassan Montenegro de Devota, her name is Devoto, she became a devotee through academic inquiry, strangely enough, you know. And then, with the blessings of her rector, who's a very astute guy, and impetus, she started the Institute for Classical and Oriental Studies, which allows us to present, you know, Krishna consciousness in a very natural way like that and so on. So this is the periodical, twice a year, The Blue Lamp. Why not? You know, there's Radha and Krishna amongst Buddha and everybody else like that. You know? So you can understand what's going on. You know, so this is her mode of preaching, and it works very well. You know, people who know her know that she's affiliated with ISKCON. It's not a secret, but it's like you have to know her to know it, like that. You know, and so therefore she was going to become the dean of the Faculty of Modern Languages, but the rector told her there's little fear that she'll use this as a preaching platform. So she's right back down on, you know, ISKCON preaching programs. Not stop, but back down on putting them back in proportion with Muslim programs and everything else like that. She's a very astute politician. Yeah. So this Calcutta lecture was reprinted there. And I was talking to some of her faculty people who were coming. And one of them said, I asked him, what's the main focus of the university here? He said, well, the main focus is architecture. That's where we're really like our outstanding field. And then Argentina, when the devotee Mukunda Charan was organizing programs, you know, academic programs, and he's also an architect. So somehow or other we had a very good response in architecture, you know, an actual application like that. So this time when I came here, then I went to Calcutta University first and spent about 2 weeks talking to Dr. Samaresh Bandopadhyaya about Vastu Shastra, you know, Vastu, Stapachyaved. These are the aspects of Veda. Ayurved, Dharmaved, Gandharvaved, you know, what else? Jyotived, Stapachyaved, these are all Veda. They all are angas, limbs. They're all meant to come to Krishna. Right? And the Bhagavatam is like an encyclopedia. Right? It includes a little bit of all these things. You know, so whatever your field is, if you're sufficiently sharp, just by reading Srimad Bhagavatam, you can come to the conclusion and start working on that. Right? The purpose of Dhanurveda is not to become the king, like Duryodhana, and enjoy prestige, fame, flattery from beautiful girls, good food. It's to become Krishna conscious. That's the purpose of Dhanurveda. Ayurveda is not something, you know, to counteract cancer from smoking all the time. It's to come to Krishna. Right? So Stapatyaveda, architecture. Right? Also to come to the absolute truth, not just by architecture. So big a project like that, and maybe later on we can mention more details about that. This is a very interesting field. Prabhupada told Sri Damodara Maharaj, he said, sharpen your intelligence on Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, then take all these things in your field, your area, your expertise, and then, you know, explain them better. You know, show them how it's really supposed to work, you know. Become better at these things. Become a better chemist, a better mathematician, better physicist, better architect, better mother, better administrator, right? Whatever it is, better cook, you know. And that's how people are convinced. People are not convinced about science because of science and theory. And people are convinced that this is a great thing. I've written a movie here, if you want to write it down. This is produced by the BBC, British Broadcasting Corporation. They got the American Association for the Advancement of Science, national awards. It's called Science, Fiction, right? British Science, Fiction, like that. And it's a fantastic movie. It produces all these questions about, you know, different paradigms, different perspectives, different ideas like that. And it shows the whole history of science and how it's developed a certain way. And if you watch this thing, you really become a little bit more open to other ideas. So there's a British narrator talking about these things, a historian, and they have a very beautiful scene. They have a beautiful Gothic church, and this so happens behind the church is a series of radio telescopes. You know? So it's a beautiful, you know, visual image they keep playing on that, you know. So the final thing, this is how science developed and how engineering came from science and gave us all these benefits, you know, war, communication, medicine. So it finishes off with this rocket taking off, maybe about, I guess, one-third speed. So the fire is going slowly and majestically, and the clouds of smoke are turning, you know, like that, powerfully, slowly. And the support gantry is falling back as the rocket rises, you know. The Saturn IIIC is the American liftoff rocket, their big liftoff rocket. It has three pods. Each one produces 50,000 pounds of thrust. Just imagine how far you could, you know, push a Maruti if you gave it 50,000 pound kick. So there's three of these things. So the whole rocket, when it takes off, suddenly when you push the button, it suddenly produces 150,000 pounds of thrust. And the seven astronauts are sitting on top of this thing, praying to God. Everybody prays to God at that point. Everybody, even the atheists, start praying to God. Oh, please don't let it blow up. Please don't let it. When it blew up, the biggest piece they found of an astronaut was a 4-inch bone. That was the biggest piece they found. The astronauts were blown into pieces so small that you could, you know, it's the biggest piece they found. Like that, you know. So, okay, here we go. Yeah. Science. So this rocket is going off like that. And the British narrator says, science is not powerful because it is true. Science is true because it is powerful. So this is the last point down here. Somewhere I got this, you know, that you have to show these things, right? This is a real challenge for people. And many times we fail in this. You know, where's your, you know, do you Hare Krishnas have an atom bomb? Well, actually we do. We're making Brahmastra weapons in the VIHE, right? Postgraduate. They got Bhakti Shastri, Bhakti Vaibhava, and then, you know, I don't think after that, you know. Bhakti Astra. Astra Guru. Bhakti Veda. Did you ask the Guru certificate? That actually is a fact. So we can also discuss that a little bit later. This is a general perspective. People are still absorbed in science. They still respect scientists. They're studying studies. You know, people respect research science. And if you want to really talk serious to people, even our Indian Life members are coming, you talk about science, and they start becoming very serious. You know? And then the Bhaktivedanta Institute, the VTE, the VIHE, the ASA, you know, ABC, LSD, LBJ, all these things are, you know, are there. Different groups are working and trying to develop programs, the Oxford Center, like that. You know? And so take advantage of it. Really try and get involved. Find out how you can get involved. I did. I surrendered after Tamal Krishna ministered. I surrendered. Then I found my niche and where I could fit in like that. And actually, it's very fantastic preaching. It takes you right to the topmost people of society like that. You know, Prabhupada says right now we're in first year, man to man. But if you can start preaching to scientists, newspaper editors, to, you know, prime ministers of governments, we shift to second gear at that point. Everything starts going a lot faster and a lot more power. And a lot more dangerous too. Then you've got to know what you're talking about. Yeah? When you say women are less intelligent. Now you have a national government under your control when you say that, right? You know, people try to kill you. you know, half the scenario women also were women, like that. It was a terrible organization. They assassinated unlimited people. They killed entire villages of people, and half the murderers were women. That. Actually, usually the final people were, you know, the final destructive personalities were women like that. To kill, like, they got fired up. Right? Yeah, power. So, it's very serious. We're talking about this very serious. You have to really know what you're talking about like that. So this is the first part of the lecture. Are there any questions, comments, complaints, donations? We have donations over there. Wait. Ask for anything. Pablo, how is your English? Okay, he just asked that question. Yeah. But he was in the Spanish commando, no? ¿Ejército usted? ¿Para un tiempo usted está? ¿Cómo se llama el grupo? ¿Su grupo?
Green Beret.
Oh yeah, okay, he was a Spanish Green Beret. Okay, so if you have any... Anybody tries to disturb our class? Throw a chair at them. Yeah. So it's okay. Any questions, comments, arguments, complaints, additions? No? Actually, it's coming along on schedule here. Yeah. So so we're going to talk about science. You know, it's here. And how to explain it, especially. I've been giving some examples. Especially how to preach. How to get it out there. I've defeated some pretty heavy audiences as far as I was concerned like that. You know, Sadhguru deals with different kind of people than I do. I just can't relate to some of the people he's talking to like that. You know? But I dealt with, you know, pretty prominent people like that. My Prabhupada's mercy, no question about it, is my own ability. So the other point here then is this is how to explain science and the basis of Bhakti Vaibhava in the third canto. So generally, everybody knows, Prabhupada said that Bhagavad Gita is the ABC. And then, you know, you go to Srimad Bhagavatam, is our graduate level studies, and more advanced like that. So I'm going to do a recapitulation of our Padapadma course, very briefly like that. Because the Srimad Bhagavatam is our main study, it's our main focus, it's Prabhupada's main effort like that, you know. So, but it's very well organized. Many times it seems like there's a jumble of ideas and personalities appearing and on like that. So many times it seems like just a, you know, disorganized collection of stories and everything else like that. And if you want to present it to an intellectual person, for example, in South America where I'm preaching, people are much more cultured, much more interested in philosophy, much more religious, and more subtle like that. They can appreciate many things like that. They can appreciate Maria Ross as part of their culture. There's about 8 people in the Catholic Church who were accepted as having achieved Maria Ross like that. And it's confidential. It's not something discussed every day like that. St. John of the Cross, Santa Rosa of Lima, the Mother Mary, she proved it. She was in conjugal Ross. She had a baby by God. right? Okay. Yeah. Then a few more people. And the Catholic Church accepts them having achieved this level of surrender like that. So down there, the preaching is a little different than it is in North America, you know, where people are more... But there in North America, they're more trained to think analytically, you know. And someone told me that Indians generally, you know, not in a modernized environment, yes, but in a more general Indian environment, they aren't trained to think as analytically as a Westerner. For example, it says an Indian tells you dinner will be at 6 o'clock. If a German tells you dinner will be at 6 o'clock, you know it's at 6 o'clock. You know what I'm saying? Wait, okay. Let's start. Now we start eating like that. You know? If an American tells you it's 6 o'clock, you would be like, you'd be 10 minutes late like that. You know? If a Mexican tells you it's 6 o'clock, it may be 2 hours late. If an Indian tells you dinner is at, Prabhu, come for prasad at 6 o'clock. Since it's Indian translated for me, it says he means he wishes that it was at 6 o'clock. He hopes it will be at 6 o'clock. So time is one of our topics here. But everybody has different time. It's not right or wrong. It's not right or wrong. People have a different way of living in terms of time. So, but Srimad Bhagavatam is a very systematic thing. It's very satisfying for an analytical mind. For somebody with a scientific mentality, analytical mentality, which is everywhere. It's in psychology, it's in history, it's in English, it's everywhere. It's scientific methodology, epistemology, facts, details, logical arrangements between facts like that. So, Srimad Bhagavatam, the first two cantos are Krishna's lotus feet. This is our Arjuna Sutta Academy analysis. Now I got a copyright of that. There you go. All of one page. When Narayani has every year one page to it, she cheats. Her page is about six times the size. The girls are allowed to do this. Anyway. All on one page. In fact, I'm going to get the chart too, a nice poster. And 2.2.12, and Prabhupada mentions that the first two cantos are Krishna's lotus feet, and you shouldn't go beyond them. This is on the web page too, the same GeoCities web page. You can find this summary. You shouldn't go beyond them as long as you can't avoid illicit sex. If you're still, you know, still engaged grossly in illicit sex, don't go beyond the first two cantos. 2.2.12. Then the fourth canto, yeah, he mentions, anybody serious about studying Srimad Bhagavatam should make a very serious study of the first two cantos. Prabhupada says, even the gopis, when they first begin to think of Krishna, they think of his lotus feet. Right? Because they have a more intense relationship. Yeah. But they begin there. You know, Spaimana Krishna Padaravindayor, your whole life, you know, focusing on the first two cantos, improving it. If you want to build a one-story building, okay, your foundation can be okay. If you want to build a 5-story building, then you've got to check out your foundation. If you want to build a 55-story building, your foundation is the majority of the building. You don't see it. That's the majority of the building. So if you want to go to the Ras Lila, and the chapters 29 to 34 in the 10th canto, then you're going to know those first two cantos like anything. The depth, the stories, you know. What is the most, what prayers did Prabhupada lecture on the most? Yeah, three times, again and again, first two cantos. Prayer by Queen Kunti.
First, implying in the lotus feet that we have a very solid understanding of the servants of the Lord.
That
implies studying the lotus feet of the Lord, studying the first and second cantos.
Yeah.
That the person has a very profound or deep realization that he's the servant of the Lord and nothing else.
Yeah.
Is that kind of...
I think so. You bring it up. Nectar of devotion is going into rasa, and Prabhupada and Goswami are saying that some people say shanta rasa is a rasa, and other people don't accept it as a rasa. You know, and then Prabhupada mentions different authorities like that. But then he says, well, whether it's a rasa or not, it's the basis of all the rest of rasas, like that. Unless you're convinced that you're a servant of Krishna. Then, you know, people talk about the gopis. They have lusty desires to associate with Krishna. They want to engage in these, you know, lascivious activities with Krishna, adulterous relationships, physical contact with Krishna. But it's only service to Krishna. I was putting a tape a couple of days ago. Prabhupada was talking about devotional service, and he says, "Anyavivasta shunyam." He says the devotee, he only wants to serve Krishna. Somebody else comes, he wants something from Krishna. He says, that is sakam devotee. That is also good. But that is not devotional service. That is appreciation. That Krishna is wonderful, Krishna is powerful. He says, the gopis, they never ask anything from Krishna. And then there's like about 30 seconds, you know, of tense silence, maybe about 1 minute of tense silence, and then it's like, Jab, Hare Krishna. All his voices kind of choke, and it's like, yeah, I don't know, he's, you know, gone. He said, the gopis never asked anything from Krishna. And it's like, you know, thinking of the gopis and their standard of devotional service problems. You know, gone in some bhava, you know, for about, you know, probably trying to like control himself and talk, and finally he just couldn't do it. He just said, Charvani Krishna. So the gopis, the first thing they think about is, we're servants of Krishna. That's why I'm dressing, that's why I'm decorating my body, only because Krishna is pleased by this. Right? Yeah? Okay? Okay. So first two cantos are Krishna's lotus feet. Then cantos, okay, I gave this before, last year. Okay, how is the rest of the Bhagavatam divided according to my, there's some quotations too supporting. Okay, then what happens? Remember? 3 through 9 is all organized on manvantars. Yeah, manvantars. Then 10 and 11 are all Krishna lila, like that. Nausha lila is 11th canto, his appearance activities. And 12 is epilogue. The glory of Srimad Bhagavatam, summary of Srimad Bhagavatam, and somehow or other Markandeya Rishi gets tossed in there. Like that, you know? Yeah, it's a whole different topic about epistemology. Okay, so first two cantos, Krishna's lotus feet, we're going up. 3 through 9, manvantars, and then based on the manvantars. And then Krishna's smiling face, and then his crown, corona, like that. So 3 through 9, like the manvantars, this is where we get Lila avatars, Purusha avatars, Muna avatars, Shakti Vaishava avatars, until finally we come to Krishna. Right? And what kind of avatar is Krishna? Huh? Avatari. He's not an avatar. He is the source of all the rest of the avatars. Yeah. But you can't appreciate that right away. Jehovah. You know Jehovah? You know Allah? You know Yamaraj? Are they? Many people worship God with that kind of perception. So what is Yamaraj? Is he Swayam Bhagavan? No? What is he?
What?
Huh? Huh? Yeah? Shakti Vesha avatar. Yeah. Yeah, you can't surpass Yamaraj's authority, you know, on sending you where you're supposed to go like that. He says you go there, you go there. Explaining power, personality. Yeah. And Mahavishnu, what kind of avatar is he?
Purusha.
Yeah. Yeah, Purusha avatar. Yeah. So most people think like that this God is the source of the universe. He knows everything, Paramatma, and he chastises the wrongdoers, and he rewards the good doers. So it's a very common conception, even in any religion, whether you're Hindu, Muslim, Christian, like that. You know? So by 10th canto, we go through all these different things like that. More detail, 3 through 9, cantos 3 through 7 are all about the first manvantara and his children. Who's the first manvantara? Swayam Bhuvaman. Okay. Who are his children? How many children does he have?
Five.
Okay. What are their names? In the order in which they appear in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Yeah, so the mnemonic, mnemotechnic we use is DAPUP. D-A-P-U-P, or Spanish DAPUP. Devahuti, Akuti, Prasuti, Tanapana, Kriyavada. So third canto, appearance of Manu, beginning of biological engineering, right? Brahma's trying to create all these bodies. Manasaputra are too slow. So there's Sararupa, and she has her features, and Manu has his features, you know? And they're tracked. Okay, we're in business. Okay. And Devahuti, she's here, right? After that, there's a story of how they wanted to create children, they couldn't do it because the earth was submerged. Because, of, you know, the story, why is it submerged? Well, Hiranyakasipu, Hiranyaksha, Lord Bor. Okay, meanwhile, back to the main story, which is creating all the bodies. So then, Devahuti, she had her husband, who is? And her son? Okay. And that finishes off the third canto. Then in the fourth canto we encounter Devahuti Akuti. And she married
Daksha.
Ruchi. Just one chapter. And they had God and God, you know, God and God's consort for their children. And it turns up a little later on like that. Then that's why the first two chapters maybe like that's the first chapter. Then the second chapter, Devahuti Akuti, she married. And her daughter was. Yeah, and she burned herself at the Sunday feast, right? To death in the Sunday feast. Another story. And they moved the Akuti, and it goes again the whole story. And I think they moved the Akuti, Prasuti, Uttanapada, who was the father of Dhruva, that whole line, that breaks, and it will reappear again after the line of Priyavrata. So fifth canto, Priyavrata, Rishabde, Bharata Maharaj, then back to Daksha and the Prachetas. The Prachetas then marry Kamlochan, and which is an example of polyandria. And then they have Daksha for a child, for a son. And that's the fifth canto. That's sixth canto, yeah. Before that, the stories of hell which come up because of Bharata Maharaj. In the sixth canto, we go back again. And then the Prachetas have their have Daksha. Daksha has these girls. They marry all the rishis. And they're the fathers and mothers of all scorpions, horses, snakes, alligators, right? Is that scientific? Mothers can do, you know, human beings can become the mothers of alligators, snakes, horses, scorpions. I discussed that, yeah. So then that's it. That's Srimad Bhagavatam. You know, the different little avatars. So seventh canto is about what? All the avatars, all the manvantars. 3 through 6 is all the Swayambhu's children. Very systematic, one after another, almost no deviation. You can see the storyline just going. And this brings in different Purusha avatars, different Leela avatars, different Shakyamesha avatars. And then finally in the 8th canto, then he discusses all 14 manus. Who knows all 14 manus? Who knows one? Swayambhu manu. Chakshusha Manu, Vaibhasvata Manu, I can't remember this one, Tamasa Manu, Uttama Manu, okay, I got 5, so I can sit here. I can't remember any more than that. Vaibhata Manu, like that, you know. But he discusses, and he wants to please tell me about the incarnations of God during different manvantars. And how he appears like that. So we have the story of Bali Maharaj and Mandara Mountain and the ocean of milk and the Matsya and all these different incarnations. So finally there's a story of Satyavrata Maharaj and the fish. They got bigger. And then next Mandantara Satyavrata Maharaj becomes? Satyavrata. Yeah, Vaibhasvata Manu. Yeah, like that. Which is Aramanu. God. Once you got one of those really good watches, you can tell what manvantara it is, what it came from. You should manufacture those things. Show the superiority of the Hare Krishna's engineering, you know, you can tell. It wouldn't have to change. But hey, for those who just want to hang around for a long time, right? Well, it's now 5 o'clock, you know, 12 p.m., the day of Brahma, you know, so manvantara, Kali Yuga. Yeah. 10:50 p.m. Okay. So, then he has a big genealogy chart. There's two main descendants. There's the, you know, the sun god, Vivasvan, and the sun and moon god coming down there. Two dynasties. Krishna appears in the dynasty of the
moon god,
and Rama appears in the dynasty of the. Okay. Now, why are the two lines mixed? They become mixed. Maybe only in this particular, you know, yuga. Because Yadavan, right, went in toward Lord Shiva's abode, and because of the benediction that Parvati had, suddenly they all discovered they were women, right, riding their horses, and all the stallions were mares and everything. So they weren't happy with this. So then they get what happened? What was the solution?
He could be a man, one month, and a woman.
Yeah. And so when he was a woman, what happened?
He married a
fell in love with the moon gods, and then had his... Was it Buddha?
Buddha.
Yeah, okay. Surya Raksa? Yeah, right here. Yeah. So I'm trying to do all this out of this one briefcase. If I have a basis, a place to do this, secretaries, filing cabinets, so Prabhupada, I think that almost like Prabhupada's book is saying, no, that's not your service. You know, I wanted to have my own institute, the Anjana Sudha Academy, but it's just like, this is the Anjana Sudha Academy. So for me, you can learn how to have everything compact in one folder. I have to have right here, the dynasty. Okay, we'll get up right here. Vaivasvata Manu. I got someone that we come across. Illa. Yeah, so Illa is in the dynasty of Vaivasvata Manu. Ah, okay, it's before. Okay, he says that's Vibhaswan. So he's the descendant. So Illa is in the Sun Dynasty. Yeah. And when he becomes Sudyumna, he marries with somewhere over here, Buddha. Not the Buddha with a D-H, but yeah, B-U, yeah, not Lord Buddha. Yeah. Buddha, who is from Atri, who produces Soma, like that. Yeah. Okay. God. If you need greater authorities. Digby Jai Pandit. Fortunately, I know I'm a fool. So I make life easy. Yeah. But this is academic circles, no? Scholars are proud of their knowledge and everything else. This is not, you dovetail this, because, you know, the problem many times, one is scientific knowledge. You know these things. You have to be very sharp in your intelligence like that. You say something, you back it up, right? Like that. So you have that passion for, you know, for intellectual knowledge and honor these fields. Okay, there's a karma yoga. You know? Somebody else has a passion for power. Okay, becomes temple president. You know, like that. This is Bhagavad Gita, karma yoga. So that's the ninth canto. And then halfway through there, we come to Krishna. You know, and we stop there and expand all the way out for 89 chapters. You know, Vrindava Leela, Mathura Leela, Dwarka Leela, and Maushala Leela in the 11th canto. Disappearance of the Yadavas, disappearance of Krishna, final instructions to Vasudev, like that, the person of the Yadav dynasty. And then go back to the Epilogue like that, you know. So, third canto was already pretty advanced, right? You know? Justice. Everybody here, I hope, is following the four other principles. Because if you're not, you're going to be in big trouble. First two cantos, you can talk to many nice people. Many Christian people, for example. They're very nice devotees, but they still, because the tradition is not so strict, so informative, they may be indulging in some of what we would classify as illicit sex, which they wouldn't. In Jiva Goswami, in the 17th chapter of the first canto, where the four principles are mentioned, Prabhupada says that illicit sex under the marriage vow, drinking wine according to, you know, sacrifices, these are all mentioned in the Vedas. I just came from, you know, from Durga Puja. Probably mentions it in the Krishna book. First time here in Calcutta. My impression of Bandhavajaya is, it's part of the whole culture. So when we saw, you know, many pujas of Durga and like coming out, you know, something like that. And the guy coming, they're going to have a sacrifice as part of the puja. It's a big, sharp knife like that. And they're going, oh my God. They're going to cut a goat's head off like that. Blood everywhere, you know. But then they put a nice, big cucumber like that. This big. And then sacrifice the cucumber like that. And it cut right in half. It was a sharp knife. Cut it right in half like that. And then you sacrifice a smaller cucumber too. Then a sugar cane thing with something tied to it. So this is worship of Lord Shiva. If you're in the lower modes, he's there. If you want to eat meat, if you want to smoke marijuana, you know, all these things, okay. You know, Lord Shiva's right there with you. But you have to, before you smoke the marijuana, there's a whole ritual you got to do it, you know, before you pass the spiff, pass the joint. Like that. And then if you want to eat meat, okay. You can sacrifice a goat. But what do you do before you sacrifice the goat? No. Well, maybe that too. Huh? Yeah, you whisper in his ear, I'm killing you. Now in the future, you can kill me. See, if you do this a few times, you begin to think, it's not such a good deal, actually. You know, maybe I'll eat pecoras and samosas and, you know, halva and stuff like that. So So there's very, you know, there are in the Vedas too. You can engage in illicit sex. You can take intoxicants. All as religious activity, right? So these first two cantos are open for everybody. If you see somebody's a devotee, you know, this guy's a devotee, right? This lady's a devotee, you know? But, okay, then preach from the first two cantos. Give them, you know, photocopies of purports. You know, give classes on topics like that, right? And they can become purified like that. Because in the second, third canto, we have here, this is what the thing with licit and illicit. We are not yet, somewhere here. Oh yeah. 1A, over here, licit and illicit sex. Let me tell you a story about two devotees. Krishna Das and, what's her name? Dandi Maya, the Dasas. They were in Vancouver, Canada, and they were a group of children. They grew up in ISKCON. And they got married, they went out to the provinces, you know, and there was not too many people here, he's there, and he had a preaching center. Every day he would go out preaching like that to Canadian people, and sacrificing, getting kicked and spit on. And she would stay at the preaching center and receive all the guests, take care of the bees. And a really strong program, about 3 years. Maybe longer than that, maybe 4 years. So finally he went back to Vancouver during Rath Yatra. And the temple there is a very big, about 5 acres, there's houses, a big open area in the temple. So during Rath Yatra, a lot of devotees come and put tents up like that. It's a very beautiful time in Vancouver, fresh air. It's a big tourist time. So they set a tent up also. And her husband went out, Krishna Das, you know, just organizing the preaching for the Sankirtan. Yes, the blessing. I'll talk about it. Krishna Das was going out every day, you know, with Dudi Dharma Maharaj, doing Harinam Sankirtan, promoting the Ratni, the old Ratni Yatra. And Dagi Maya was visiting all her old Guru friends, and all her girlfriends were there. And some of them had brown babies, and some had white babies, and some had yellow babies, and some had red babies. And they're all asking her, "Where's your baby?" "Well, I haven't got one." "You want to hold my baby?" "Well, okay." So she was, if you say that in English, she was fried. So finally Krishna Das came back into the tent after all this time, and she was ready for it. "You never loved me, you don't love me now, you only married me because your spiritual master forced you to do it. We're never going to have any children." And he said, "I love you, of course we'll have children." He said, no, you're just saying that, you know, it's not true. "I do, I love you. Prove it. Right now." So she got pregnant and they had two horrible twins, monsters. You recognize the story? Pregnancy of? The names have been changed to protect the good. Yeah. But I tell another one too. This one's kind of people think, "Oh, I laugh." You know? But if you take, it's in the fourth canto, so I'm not going to do it. And also it's too heavy. It ought to cover it. Sunday feast, guy comes in, you know, big Sunday feast, roaring kirtan, hundreds of devotees. This was on CNN, you're on the internet like that. It occurred in the Italian temple, big Indian temple, middle of the people. Devotee comes in, he was a big collector, fantastic Sankirtan devotee, guy has his cell phone now, his silk dhoti, GDC secretary, being the temple president. And everybody's, you know, "Jai, Jai, Prabhu, Prabhu," the whole kirtan is going on, guests there. And he sees the Food for Life guy over by the altar chanting his rounds. He's still in his you know, food distribution clothes like that. He hasn't even changed those. But he's been working so hard to do the program, he hasn't got his rounds done, so he's in there chanting his rounds. Doesn't even pay respect to the temple president when he comes in like that. But, unfortunately, the temple president, oh, then he starts to chastise, and he stops the whole kirtan in front of all the guests, life members, everybody, starts chastising this guy like that. But unfortunately, this guy's, the temple president's daughter, married to this guy, right? So then she comes and starts chastising her father in public. She says, "People like you just do sangatan to fill up your bellies," like that, right? On and on like that. So then she runs out crying, and she comes back in covered with kerosene from the generator, like that. It's not kerosene. She lights herself on fire and burns to death in the Sunday feast. So I tell this, I'm an actor, right? So I tell this with more like, "Oh, you heard it on CNN. Oh, didn't you hear this? Oh, it's really terrible. You know, and tell it like that." And the people are flipping out. It's just like, "Oh, did she die? Oh, what temple was this? Oh, the problem is here. These things will never happen in Prabhu. So whose story is this?
Sati.
Yes, Sati. You know, Sati is the daughter, until present is Daksha, Lord Brahma is the GDC secretary, the food for land guy, Lord Shiva. So this is reality. You know, we're living this, right? You know, back to Krishna Das and what's her name? Vani Mai. You know, this is the moment of proving it. Suddenly she remembers the story of, you know, of Ditti and Karma to hold everything. Wait a second. Yeah, because she wasn't grossly lusty. She didn't want to enjoy sense gratification. She was feeling very naturally, you know, embarrassed, or, you know, that her other friends had children, and she didn't. And she felt, what's the word like that? Or, you know, her pride was hurt. Her feelings were hurt like that. So not a gross fall down, it's a really gross sense. You know, but big results. You know. So third canto was already quite advanced. Right? And by the time you finish coming to the third canto, it's assumed you're following the four revelative principles. Like, well. Because in the third canto, we're beyond illicit sex. You know, only. Now we're coming to licit sex. Right? The story, the marriage of Kardama Muni and Devahuti. Technicolor. PG. Where is it? Parental guidance, what, 16? 18? Triple X. And they have a bed that increases sex desire. Right? It's a very intense program like that. You really start meditating on what is this? What's happening? You put it into modern language and you have to take this to heart. You know, I don't know how big your heart is. Dayananda didn't go much beyond the fourth canto. So you can get on the bike, you can get on the, do you want your name on the bike and on the calendar? Like Variety Devanasi. Narottam Das, right? No. You don't have to go beyond the fourth canto, it seems, like that. So Dayananda didn't go much beyond the fourth canto, no? Srimad Bhagavatam is to take you to the Rasa Lila. That's beyond Lila Avatar, that's beyond Vaikuntha, that's beyond Sankarshan, that's beyond Mathura, that's beyond Devaki, that's beyond Yashoda. Even Mother Yashoda doesn't know what the Rasa Lila. You think Mother Yashoda thinks that Krishna is going out, sneaking out the back window to play with other people's wives tonight? Arjuna knows, she suggested it. Suggested to her. You're somewhere else. Yeah. So, we have to take this to heart, right? And you have to get the first, you know, for even the first two cantos in your heart, it's going to be a pretty big heart, right? You know? Even the Buddha Shamrita, it's kind of hard to fit in there. So the third canto we encounter illicit sex. The story of Devahuti and Kardama Muni. They were doing austerities. He was doing austerities. He was a faithful, strong brahmachari, sacrificing so much, going out doing sankirtan, being harassed so many ways for 7 years. And then, one Sunday feast, he's sitting there in front of the deities, Radhavanan Bihari, somebody, you know, going to Charan in Spain. And he's chanting his rounds and looking at Krishna, and Krishna's looking at him. Krishna, he knows Krishna is so grateful for what he's done. There's no question that Krishna is not, you know, is ungrateful. And Krishna's even crying, a few tears coming, how grateful he is and thankful for his austerities. So this Brahmacharya is thinking, I can have anything I want. And you're telling Krishna, I can have anything I want from you. I know, all I have to do is ask for it. So somebody in my position who would ask for a beautiful wife, a credit card with no limit, a beautiful vehicle, vacations in the Swiss Alps, skiing, all these things. Anybody in my position would ask for that is a complete fool. But after 7 years of being a brahmachari and sacrificing, I have to confess, I'm a fool. Right? I just haven't been able to get rid of these desires. So this is okay, this is very important, right? But most people don't stay brahmachari, right? In ISKCON, they will get more chance because we're not an ordinary society. But one estimate is out of 1,000 people, you probably knew maybe 5 people, one person, maybe half a person. Out of 10,000 people, maybe 5 will be brahmachari their whole life like that. I was married, did that. Not going to do it again, right? Yeah, maybe. I was in an Indian photocopy store and it said, to marry once is duty. To marry twice is foolishness. To marry 3 times is insanity. But I was married once, so.
No.
Well, but anyway, I went through it. You know, Vihasa Ashram really tried to do it properly, and I had a lot of advancements in social psychology, you know. I really was able to purify myself. But, you know, it's not normal. Normal things, you have to go through it, right? You have to try it out. I tried it out. You know, everybody else in the Bhagavatam, most people tried it out, you know. Okay. So Krishna tells this devotee, don't worry, don't bloop, don't leave, it's okay, you know, don't be embarrassed in front of all the rest of brahmacharyas that you're going to get married or something else like that. They're going to get married too. They're also all going to get married also. You know? And I've already arranged your wife. She will be a veritable cow of plenty in your family life. She was a daughter of the mayor of New York. She was raised in a convent. She's coming tomorrow to Sunday feast. So they got married. She was a great brahmacharini. She used to do service like anything. But she kept falling asleep in the Bhagavatam classes. So she had to make flower garlands to stay awake. Why? Because she wasn't convinced. Right? Deep down in her heart, she's thinking, if I just had the right guy, if I had Mr. Wonderful, right? And I could go through life on his arm, Mr. Wonderful. You know? And so Devahuti, same thing. You can look at it from a lady's point of view, or you can look at it from a man's point of view. You can do both. And you see, she got a husband, right? He was a yogi, he was the best brahmacharya in the temple. He did Sankirtan for 40 years. He had so much potency backed up that, you know, there's no limit to his credit card. He's anything, just, you know, swipe it. Sure, that's $100,000. Just run a few, see what happens. And accept the charge. Unlimited. Yeah. You get that. You do tapasya, you do austerity. You get all these sense gratification. But they never deviated from the four good principles. Right? The wedding was there. She had a beautiful silk sari. You had a silk dhoti. You know, now I have time to leave for the airport. In most countries, the ratio of women to men is like 5 to 1, 6 to 1. In Brazil, it's 12 to 1. Like that. People don't realize this fact. You know, from Northern European and American countries, you don't realize this. So polygamy is really something you got to figure out how to do if you want to have a happy society. The ratio of men to women, women to men, in the United States and many other European countries is 1 to 1. In Spain it's about 4 to 1, in Morocco it's 5 to 1, Ecuador is 6 to 1, Peru is 5 to 1. I was saying this, one girl from Bolivia starts laughing. She said in Brazil. She said in Brazil it's 12 to 1. Yeah. Yeah. No, there's different reasons like that.
Yeah,
yeah. Or strong women. Or somebody's cursed. Exactly. No. Spanish women all have deep voices, right? It's like, sorry, I don't know. Spanish, I también, mujeres de Green Beret también.
Yeah.
Y mujeres en España, en la ejército. Okay, now they also have green gray women now too in the Spanish. Yeah, they're tough. So anyway, so Carmen Muni's about to go with the Hibahuda to the airport, you know, for their honeymoon in I don't know where they're going, Jamaica. They go water skiing, chant their rounds every morning like that, but afterwards they go water skiing every day and go to Jamaica, and after that go to the Swiss Alps. And, you know, they go to all these beautiful pleasure gardens like that. So basically, say Krishna says, if you have these desires and you can't get rid of them by just hearing, then try it out. You know, do it. Get married, right? Enjoy. Try to enjoy the material world, this morning's class, but in a civilized way, right? Without becoming attached, you know, more than necessary to try it out. So it's very important. Third canto is very important communication, very important idea, very important preaching. Many times I hear people saying, why? You're the first person to say this. Everybody says, just be tough, be a brahmachari. Like that. You know? No way, Mama. It doesn't work. You know? And it's not our philosophy. Our philosophy is that most people should get married. I was married. I tried it out. Never again. I really did it. And I did it. I followed the experiment. You know, I followed the instructions. I, you know, followed principles, chanted my rounds. You know, everything else, but, you know, Carmen Woody's about to leave for the airport. They're in Peru, let's say, and Devahuti, and, you know, I don't know, Juan y Maria, you know. And, you know, Devahuti's looking over her six maids of honor, all of her girlfriends, since she's a little girl. She knows none of them are going to get married. She's walking off with a man, and she's feeling guilty as hell. And all like looking at her, waiting, trying to like, you know, have a good time, and you know, have lots of children, and be happy, and, you know, we're really happy for you. And she's feeling, you know, and then Kartikeya is looking at her, looking at them, and he says, well, come on, Devahuti, here's the tickets for the airplane. And what do you know? There's six more tickets. Like that. Ah! But look at me, die. So they all went off together, lived happily ever after. Right? And these are all her friends, or else Devaki and all of her sisters marrying Vasudeva. Right? So these are very advanced topics in social science. Right? And how polygamy is it? That definitely, you want to wake people up in a class, you have to throw them into a card ball and just start talking about polygamy. He wakes up. But that's advanced. You know, to be able to institute these advanced social science aspects, right? To be able to take charge of, you know, entire nations, you have to understand how to solve these problems. You know? And the karmis aren't doing this. You know, divorce is so high now, and broken families are so high, it's beyond belief. Right? Almost every country is becoming just a horrible reality. And then people really don't know how to live, they don't know how to treat each other, other human beings, and they're fighting, it's going to get worse and worse. Unless somebody who understands Daivi Varna Ashram Dharma can start giving them advice. Okay. In my opinion, I usually get beaten over the head with these things, the next step in ISKCON is polygamy. It may take a few years, though, like that. Hansa Dutta says, Hanuman, you're a man ahead of your time. Okay, so I usually have to present these ideas and people beat on me. Why are you talking about these things? Okay. Well, you watch. And they're really going to solve a lot of problems we have in ISKCON, even divorces, our own family stability and things like that. Because it's very natural. And now we're getting into social sciences here. So that's the social sciences and all these things. Polygamy, kings, rather than democracy. Democracy doesn't work. Horrible government. Abraham Lincoln said it was a horrible form of government. Monarchy is the best form of government, but how to do it, right? So this is advanced social science. So in my reading of Srimad Bhagavatam, there's more about Daivi Varna Ashram Dharma than there is about Bhakti Yoga. Bhakti Yoga is there, but the Acharyas pull it out for those who are ready. Most of it's about how to spiritualize your social life, right? How to understand your ashram, every aspect of life, how to make that social situation spiritually stimulating. Right? Yeah? Because you know, we're social. You know? We're social. You know? Even people who aren't social, they imagine social relations. They go nuts. They imagine they're talking to people. So if you know how to make your social environment spiritually stimulating, you know, then you're spiritual. Very small level. Below that is the physical sciences. Vastu. Okay. Which way is north? That way? Yeah, okay. And according to Vastu Shastra, the plot of land should be square, you know, your plot of land. The building should be in the southwest corner, and not touching the boundary lines, right? The temple room should be in the northeast corner, right? And this is a book by one devotee, we'll get into maybe like in the third day. This will be a little taste here, physical sciences. And the Vastu Purush is lying on his head that way. It's like the Bharat root, but there's a Bharat root for every parcel of land. So the personified land, his head is over in the northeast corner, his stomach is in the middle, and his feet are like that, down over here. So there's many, many things you can do to create a physically stimulating environment. For example, if your temple room is in the northeast corner, that means sunrise comes into your temple room, right? And it's early, fresh morning, late, and a lake, a pond of water, because water stores a lot of solar energy. It was very much ionized and stuff. So all day long, that water is very special ionized water, possibly it's negative ionized, but possibly turns energy. Okay. So one of the worst things you can possibly do, maybe the worst, is to put your toilet in the northeast corner, which basically means you're putting you're defecating in the Vastu Purusha's face. Okay. So in the Gurukula in his name. Yeah, Australia. They had a Vastu guy come there and Tibet told me this. He's looking at things and says, oh yeah, this happens, that happens. women have this kind of role in this situation.
Yeah, it's true.
Oh yeah, this happens, you know. So what is this?
Well, that's the outcome. People go, move it! You know, well, okay, we'll move it. Now!
You know, twisting the whole thing up, Australia has probably the most dangerous snakes on earth. Horrible vipers. And as you're tossing this thing up, they found three nests of nasty, horrible snakes under there, like that. They got the thing removed like that, and everything just became, it was like, just like this moving, it was like feeling like you're breathing and everything like that, and so on. So there are rules for creating a physically stimulating environment, you know, for spiritual life. There are rules for creating a socially, psychologically stimulating environment. And we should take advantage of all these as much as we can. This is why we're Brahmins, right? The Brahmins are supposed to know these things. That's why they take more education. This is why we're not out working, you know, in the garden. I know. What does PhD mean? What did Prabhupada say?
Model department.
Yeah. But he said, devotees with PhD, I will accept for consideration different writings for the Bhaktivedanta Institute. So he wanted devotees to be fully qualified, fully educated, academically, in terms of application principles, not ivory tower, pie in the sky. No, you understand these things for application, for preaching, for, you know, how they work. Right? So, and as much as you need to know, yeah? I'm trying to think of, you know, convince some people not to finish the Bhakti Lama program here. Whatever. It has to be very real, you know, real practical application like that. Otherwise this becomes, yeah, we know that. Anybody involved in academia knows this is the contamination. This becomes, you know, competition, intellect. Krishnadas Kaviraj talks about these verses, and I don't know myself so much, but here's a 14-page purport, which is a summary of Sanatana Goswami's refutation of these verses. Let me read this. So Prabhupada's books are so complete. You stack them up. Room conversations, Bhagavad Gita lectures, you know, letter books, Bhagavatam, Nanyacharyamrita. It's ridiculous. It's a nice lecture. It's a nice lecture to give. Introduction to the Vedic Library. And then some people say, but Prabhupada didn't give you everything. And this staff of books is like a joke. It's like, even by chance, he wouldn't have to give us everything. Yeah, there's so many details. But even this details, if you know what you read these books, you'll find everything. In fact, he's been the every other person's giving. Some points here and there, details. But here's the deal, there's a 14-page purport that Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is a summary study, Prabhupada's, you know, squeezing in so much in a short time. It takes an experienced author 2 years to produce a book, 4 years to write a book like this. Prabhupada did that, I don't know, 100 ordinary writers, you know, Mahalati, right? Short time. And so, yeah, we should study these things very academically, very intelligently, but all with this application in mind, right? Where am I going to use this, right? How can I use this? And it's there. It's there. And the biggest people on the face of the earth are generating the consciousness that everybody else is following. Intellectuals ultimately are behind everything, Brahmins. So you have to become qualified. Three final comments. Question. Why am I not following the outline? I did everything so far in this first part except for this 4, 23, 16, 17. Tomorrow. Who knows? That's crazy. Yes, sir. So, 2.2.12 says, as long as one is engaged in illicit sex, he shouldn't dare to recite beyond the first two chapters.
What about distributing beyond the first
two? Now we don't have, I distributed full sets. That's our whole goal, is discussing, you know, studying all the books so you can distribute them. We should have a really strong program for distributing full sets. We don't have this one. So we're giving it to them, but, you know, with guidance, you know. He said, start with the first few cantos. The preface said, don't jump ahead like that, you know. But we're, in the very beginning, we're still publishing books in quantity, like we published like 10,000 third cantos, 10,000 fourth cantos, and the BDT had to distribute those to get the money back to go on publishing like that. So then we were distributing like the more advanced books, today it's hard to read those next year devotions. You know, and when they find it, people were like, they'd be willing to read your books like that. You know? So, personally, I like, you know, Vaidya Bhagavata, Nectar of Instruction, Prabhupada's Lilamrita, as beginning books like that. You know, as beginning books, introductory books like that. Bhagavad Gita, Science of Self-Realization. But usually that's, you know, in the minute people become more advanced, then different literature is more practical, you know, on different levels like that. But Prabhupada said, my books are like a candy tree. Whatever you taste it, it's sweet. Like that. But you understand, well, this is, you know, I have enough sweet smell. Is there anything else in Subji and Shukhani, all two bodies here, I guess. And you naturally, if you're sincere, then you find out, you know, where you're at, what you need. Somebody who's going to die within a short period of time, who almost was self-realized his last lifetime, they just take life in Chaitanya Charitamrita and just read that, you know? And they're going to absorb that totally non-physical, non-psychological, you know, platform. There's somebody else who doesn't really understand the idea, it's not the body. You know, we're all coming into this at different levels. But an expert devotee, Prabhupada, you can see, you know, what the people are at. Yes, sir.
I in the third canto, we read how the Bhagavati serves asking for our Muni to have seen the Lord and the darshan of the Lord, which is serves him faithfully for a long time. And after that, she comes to the kind of conclusion that he wastes her time. And she says she's tired or sick of that
communication.
And then he starts, the Padama starts to instruct her about the devotional service.
He does also?
Yeah, because then he says, okay, now I instruct you about devotional service.
Yeah.
I wonder, what was she doing in terms of service all this time? Was it considered devotional service or...?
No, it was sakam. How many kinds of mixed devotional service are there?
81.
Have
you got that
yet? It's just an exact guy. 80 modes. So she was serving him because for sense gratification. But not gross sense. We think sense gratification in terms of like gross pleasure, you know. But she was serving him for progeny, for prestige, for, you know, honor, you know, and sense gratification, gross sense gratification. So her service, what she was doing, that wasn't the problem. It was the motivation.
But it says he was destroying all his spiritual assets, and it's when she became fearless and
Prasad,
what about Prasad?
Yeah.
What gave it
to her? So Prabhupada said the wife may not be as spiritually advanced as her husband, right? And she may not know in her mind, in her brain, you know, why she's doing this and everything else. But at heart, she's doing it out of respect, you know, for superior authority, right? You know, but the ladies are instructed to take, you know, sometimes take their husband as representative of God. He's a qualified person, you know. And why? Because it's natural psychology, you know. Very easy for a lady to focus on a man, her grown-up son, her husband, her father. You know, tendencies there, okay, so you use that. A man has different psychology, so it's not recommended for him to think of his wife as God, as Radharani. You don't say that, you know. But it's natural, so she was just, you know, she was seeing her husband as God. And so her service was to God. But, you know, mixed up like, okay, this God is forgiving me sense gratification, right? The God in heaven is forgiving me mukti, you know, liberation. You know? So it's just one of the 81 types of events, but basically at heart, she was honest. She was sincere. And so then, she was developing Adhyata Sukriti, or Punya Kriti Kriti.
Later in the Gurpa Prabhupada explains, much later, how both have to, if service is not without knowledge, it's sentimental.
Yeah.
And just knowledge,
yeah.
speculation, intellectual speculation.
Well, there's sensuous knowledge, I see this. There's speculative knowledge, which we can come to later on, tomorrow, which usually occurs in the head. And then there's buddhi, which is also a knowledge, but it's still material. And then finally there's pure spiritual knowledge. So different levels of knowing something. So somebody may not know things in different levels, but at heart, they're doing it because at heart they know this is right. Every other level contradicts their activity, but from the heart it's just they have to do it.
We could go from that and take that as an example of how the devotee is doing service without the foundation of their analysis and study.
Yeah.
And therefore, she was not really quite clear what she's kept going for.
Mentally. But at heart, she had enough, I guess, the sukriti, enough position, so she was acquiring these things. It's very subtle, analyzing different people in different positions. Last question.
Yeah. You mentioned there would be giving up that lust to try and be great in practice and how we can take up, because she has some motivation.
Can you fall from the spiritual world? Is it possible? So, what do you say, when we were brought on to somebody, the Swami, someone told him, oh, Prabhupada, did you, so once you go to the spiritual world, you can come back again. And he was so places in the Bhagavad Gita said, once having gone, never return, right? Once you go to the spiritual world, you never come back, in the Bhagavad Gita. So he said, he personally asked Prabhupada, when the Buddha said, he said that once you go to the spiritual world, you can come back, you can fall down. Is that true? Because he says, in many places in Bhagavad Gita, once you go there, you don't come back. And he quoted one verse, and Prabhupada laughed and said, that means almost never. Almost never. Right? Unless you're going to have Krishna for a son, every single kind of marriage is illicit sex. The Prabhupada said this is cucumber theft. The farmer has all these cucumbers. People walk by, of course, they take one, eat it. The farmer looks, okay, it's okay. But somebody has his basket, and the farmer comes over and, says, hey, okay, here's your bill. So on. So Prabhupada says that marriage, all beautiful girls are for Krishna. They should cook for Krishna, sing for Krishna, and dance for Krishna. But he says, so being married to a beautiful girl is cucumber theft. Right? You're stealing cucumber. Right? But his father says, Krishna allows a little cucumber theft. It's okay, she's giving up all these things. But still she has some material desire. And then and she experiences clearly, right? That it's not gratifying. Maybe we've had this experience ourselves. We're forced by our senses to do some sense gratification, and we don't want to. We keep on chanting everything else, and you see, this is not nice. And then your mind and body become purified, right? So we have to understand analytically all these different levels. That's why it's repeated over and over again. You're going to get what's happening. Okay, my senses are in goodness, my mind's in ignorance, my intelligence is in passion, and I am here, me spiritually. And I'm going to do something. I'm trying to get all of them as much as possible in goodness. So tomorrow we'll go on with if you have time, you can read this. It's pretty well written. This article from the Calcutta lecture, like that. And then so tomorrow we'll go through an analytical description of the elements, like that. And if you're advanced enough, afterwards you have your Astra Guru certificates. You have Astra Guru certificates. You have to do something, burn up something. Thank you very much.